with Phil Tseng Yu, and then I've had extremely extensive conversations with Davide, Tudor, and Kevin. I'd like to thank them very much for all the help. And then also a special thank you to Natalie for coming up with a new title. Okay. So symplectic duality is a subject in mathematics, which I think was best explained in papers by Braden, Proudfoot, Licata, and Webster. And it's become clear in the last few years that really that this subject ought to be viewed as a consequence of a physical field, which is called 3D n equals 4 mirror symmetry, which is due to Intrilligator and Seiberg. And sort of the two papers that helped kick off this connection are a paper by some papers by Braverman, Finkelberg, and Nakajima, where they actually let one compute the Coulomb branches of these 3D n equals 4 theories, although there was earlier work in the physics literature by Matt Bullimore, Tudor Demofte, and Davide Gaiotto. And then also a paper of myself with Matt Bullimore, Tudor Demofte, and Davide Gaiotto, where we sort of worked out that one could actually identify the categories that come up in symplectic duality with certain categories of boundary conditions for these 3D n equals 4 theories. And I'm sadly, in this talk, I'm not going to spend any time, because it's only 30 minutes, trying to connect the mathematical statements of symplectic duality, like as people are most used to them, to this newer way of thinking about them. I'm going to make some different mathematical conjectures coming from the study of these 3D n equals 4 theories that I claim are as fundamental, if not more fundamental, than the ones that are made by Braden, Proudfoot, Licata, and Webster. And if you want to know how they relate to sort of other stuff, you can ask me after the fact. So our starting point is going to be a 3D n equals 4 theory T. But this is an object of physics, and it's a complicated object of physics, and too complicated to define mathematically right now. And so what we're going to do is we're going to take twists of this field theory to produce some objects that actually are mathematically tractable. So we're going to simplify this theory into a holomorphic topological twist. So this is a field theory that it depends only holomorphically on two of the directions. It's a 3D field theory that depends holomorphically on two of the directions and only topologically on the remaining direction. So you can think of that as something like a vertex algebra with an extra product on it. And then I want to talk about two further topological twists of this holomorphic topological twist, which I'll call the A twists and the B twists. But because these things are all objects of physics and supergeometry, this holomorphic topological twist is really only a Z mod 2Z graded object. But you can actually lift this Z mod 2Z grading to two distinct Z gradings, which I'll refer to as the A grading and the B grading. And each of these deformations from the holomorphic topological twist to the A twist and from the holomorphic topological twist to the B twist are each compatible with one of the Z gradings. So basically, if you only want to talk about one of these things at a time, you can talk about everything in a purely Z graded way. That'll come up a lot. Okay, and then I don't just want to try and describe the entire structure of these field theories to because that would take way more than 30 minutes. So instead, I want to focus on what's known as the category of line defects in these 3D theories. Category of line defects, if you had a topological field theory, this would be what the field theory assigns to a circle. The way that you can figure this out is that if you had a line in three-dimensional space, the link of that line is a circle. That's the sort of the recipe. If you wanted to do surface defects in three dimensions, you would look and see that the link is two points, and then you would look at what the topological field theory assigned to those two points. But because two of my directions like should be combined into one holomorphic direction, and I want to try and consider actually a line that is perpendicular to this holomorphic direction, I can't actually use a circle. Instead, I'm going to go ahead and use a formal punctured disk. But you should think of this formal punctured disk as being a circle for the rest of the talk. Okay. So now what I can do is I can try and give you a definition, at least semi-classically, of what spaces one should be looking at when you consider these three different twists on the formal punctured disk. And I'm going to make an assumption that my theory is actually of cotangent type. So that means that it's determined by some cotangent bundle of some space, of some stack X. This 2-0 that I've written is about the fact that I've been saying that for this holomorphic topological twist, like it's this bigraded object. And so basically, like I want to consider this cotangent bundle with an extra grading so that I can either think of it, or really you could think of it as just being like an ordinary cotangent bundle of X with a C star action that makes the holomorphic symplectic form have weight 2. And then like if you were to use that grading instead, you could think of this thing as your homological grading. You could think of this thing as being a two-shifted cotangent bundle. And so like basically like this thing is, like I'm gonna like switch back and forth between considering these things. And I made a horrible mistake when I was writing other parts of this talk where for some reason I decided to put the B grading first. It was too late to change it by the time I labeled this slide, so I apologize. And more generally, like you can do everything that I'm gonna talk about with pretty much any symplectic stack with a weight 2 C star action that makes the symplectic form have weight 2. The field theories that you get this way, people usually call Lagrangian. But you're going to need some extra data to make sense of them that might not always exist. Okay, so this holomorphic topological twist is basically going to be given by studying the space of maps from the Dolbeau stack of the punctured disk into this cotangent bundle. The Dolbeau stack of the punctured disk is kind of a problematic object, but I'm just going to work with it. And depending on whether you look at it in the A grading or the B grading, you can basically rewrite this mapping space in two distinct ways. So if you use the A grading, you can actually write this thing as just the space of map, you could look at the space of maps from the punctured disk into X, and then, so like the loop space of X, and then you can take the Dolbeau stack of that and then take the one-shifted cotangent bundle. Or if you look at it in the B twist, you can look at the space of Dolbeau loops in X and then take maps and then take the cotangent bundle if you want to look at it in the B grading. And I just want to be clear that these two different descriptions, it's very non-trivial, like how you move from one to the other, like which stuff is the cotangent direction really gets messed up. Like it's a very like non-trivial way of rewriting these things. And then if I want to move to the A twist, I should look at the holomorphic topological twist in the A grading, and a degeneration from the Durand stack to the Dolbeau stack. And so if I want to consider the A grading, the A twist, I should look at T star of maps D star from into the loop space of X Durand. And if I want to do the B, in either case, I'm just going to replace Dolbeau by Durand. If the Dolbeau was on the outside, the Durand stays on the outside. If the Dolbeau was on the inside, the Durand stays on the inside. And this is sort of a semi-classical approximation of the theory. But in order to actually get a category out of this, one needs to use a procedure which is called shifted symplectic geometric quantization. And this is a thing that like barely exists right now. Like basically, there's sort of like some preliminary work by Pavel Safronov. Like Toen has done a little bit of work. Tony Pantev has done a little bit of work. Phil Sang has done a little bit of work on this before. Like there's like a lot of theorems that you can say about this, but we don't actually know the full contours of like what shifted symplectic geometric quantization is going to be. But at least for cotangent bundles, it's pretty obvious. And the thing that you should, the only thing that you really need to know about it at the beginning is that if you have an n-shifted symplectic stack, you're going to get out an n category when you apply the geometric quantization. And so if we apply it to the three different, the spaces that I had here, these things are all one-shifted cotangent bundles. So when I do geometric quantization, I'm going to get a category. And the way that you get the category is you just take the base of the cotangent bundle and take quasi-coherent sheaves. Like if I had a more complicated symplectic, you know, this is just like when you're doing ordinary geometric quantization, it's very easy to do cotangent bundles. If I had a more interesting symplectic stack, I would have to do real work. But at least for now, I can just take this as an ansatz. So in the A twist, I'm going to get quasi-coherent sheaves on this. Sorry, if I look at the holomorphic topological twist in this A grading, I get quasi-coherent sheaves on this, on the Dolbeau space of this loops in X. If I look at the B grading, I end up getting quasi-coherent sheaves on the Dolbeau loops in X. And then in the A twist, I get quasi-coherent sheaves on the Durham space of the loop space, but that's just D modules on the loop space. And in the B twist, I get quasi-coherent sheaves on the Durham loops in X. Okay. Yeah.
Shift in the cotangent bundle, how did you like decide how to translate that?
I basically did what I needed to do in order to make it come out to be one when I rearrange things. You mean here?
I meant more in your like sort of formal geometric quantization, like if it was T star two.
Then I would get a two category. I'll tell you about that two category later.
Okay.
But basically like you should get the thing that people would call two Q co, which would be sheaves of quasi-coherent categories. Right, or like quasi-coherent sheaves of categories, and that's a two-category. And we'll see it later. Okay, and I just want to say one thing about the translation between these two guys. So these two guys, even though they came from the same space, they came from it with different Z gradings that agreed up to Z mod 2Z. So there ought to be an equivalence between these two categories, but only like once you forget the grading down to Z mod 2Z. And it ought to come from, like what people call like a Blattner-Kostant-Sternberg kernel, where like when you do geometric quantization, there, T star R, you could either choose your position as the base of your cotangent bundle, or you could choose momentum as the base of your cotangent bundle, and then like the two different geometric quantizations are related by a Fourier transform, and there ought to be like a Kazul duality that relates these two categories, and it ought to follow from some general theorems about geometric quantization of one-shifted symplectic stacks, but like it's not around yet. But one could try and prove all these things like in a direct way, but I feel like I want to try and tell you like if God was giving a proof, like this is the proof he would give. He would invent geometric quantization. Or actually Kevin would disagree with me. He'd say he'd invent deformation quantization. Maybe. Okay. All right. So then 3D mirror symmetry, I won't say a lot about it, but if a theory T and a theory T shriek are 3D mirror, you're going to get some relationship between the twists of T and T shriek. And basically, the only thing that you need to know is that it matches the holomorphic topological twists, but then it exchanges the A and the B twists. So the identification between the holomorphic topological twists here needs to like swap the gradings, and like it needs to be like a very like complicated kind of thing. And if you have an isomorphism between these theories, like it also ought to give you an isomorphism between categories of line operators, because like if you have isomorphic theories and you take the line operators, they're going to be isomorphic. Okay, so let's try and think about like a particular like example of a dual pair, just to see what it would say. So two theories that are dual to one another are this quiver gauge theory and this quiver gauge theory. I won't say very much about quiver gauge theories, but that's the translation here. And the statement that I would say if you looked at the A and the B twist is you would have these two isomorphisms. So you would have B-type line operators in the first theory should be A-type line operators in the second theory and vice versa. And then like the question that you might ask is like, how is one gonna prove a theorem like this? Like one, these things are like horrendous spaces. Like this loop space into X that I'm gonna be taking D modules on, this is like some horrendously infinite dimensional space. It's not even an N scheme, or like it's not even an N stack. Like it's basically, it's not infinite dimensional in any way. It's more like some sort of Tate thing. It's like just ridiculously huge. Basically, thanks to Sam Raskin and Dario Beraldo, we can basically make sense of this category now. But that's like at the very cusp of our like of mathematical ability. And like similarly on this other side, like this object is like also completely horrendous. And like basically the only results on any spaces like this are also due to Sam Raskin as well. So he basically looked at this space in the case that X is BG. So and then in that case you would have local systems, and he wrote a paper looking at quasi-coherent sheaves on the space of G local systems on a puncture disk. But I just want to say that these spaces are like huge and awful and like barely within our ability to talk about. Okay, but the way that we're going to do this is I'm going to use the physics strategy to talk about this. Using the physics strategy to prove this theorem, I'm going to get to piggyback on all that great work that Sam and Dennis and people did. And also I'll get to describe a lot about the relationship between 3D theories and 4D theories along the way. So the answer to like how you would prove a theorem like this is like you ought to take your first quiver and you ought to turn it into brains. I'll tell you, basically the rest of this talk will be telling you how to actually read one of these brain diagrams. But let me just give you some names. These circles with the crosses are called NS5 brains. These lines that are going horizontally are called D3 brains. And these vertical lines are called D5 brains. And then if you want to get the mirror theory, you apply S-duality to this brain configuration. And all you need to know about it is that it swaps NS5 and D5 brains. And it spits out a picture that looks like this, where I've swapped all my NS5s and D5s. Okay, and then now you might say like, okay, I'll turn this thing back into a quiver, and then like hopefully I'll find the quiver that I wrote down earlier. But it turns out that this thing isn't a quiver. Like if you look at it, like it's not like if you try and like use the algorithm that I used to turn this thing into a quiver, you'll find that it doesn't work. In fact, this theory isn't even of cotangent type. Like it's not one of these theories that's given by a cotangent bundle of X like I talked earlier. In fact, it's actually given by a twisted cotangent bundle, so I could make sense of it with just a little bit more work, but I'm not gonna. Instead, I'm gonna use some other physics tricks. And the physics tricks that I'm gonna use is I'm gonna use these moves called the Hanani-Witten moves, which we'll also try and like figure out how to make sense of as the talk goes on, to rewrite this, you know, crazy brain configuration into a quiver brain configuration. And roughly, like what it lets me do is I can pass a D5 through an NS5, but I like lose a D3 brain. Well, or I could lose or pick up a D3 brain, depending on how I do that. And it's not really that important that you understand this procedure, but I can rewrite this thing in some way until I get it like this. And then this thing becomes a quiver where this becomes this, this becomes this, these two horizontal lines becomes that two, and these two vertical lines become that two. Okay, and then the question is like, what the hell did that, was that? Like, how do I make sense of that mathematically? The first time anybody ever did this to me, it was Tudor, and I hit him with a rolled up newspaper. okay, but I claim that like, in fact, this procedure that I've just described is actually. That's right. I wrapped a brain and I hit him with it. But I claim that this is actually like just some mnemonic for writing down some computations in local Langlands, in local geometric Langlands, and we're gonna try and like translate and see like what those things are. And I better talk a lot faster. Okay, so the reason that these things are computations in local Langlands is that these D3 brains, they actually carry a copy of 4D n equals 4 super Yang Mills with gauge group GLN. And that's the theory that physically gives rise to geometric Langlands. And this theory like also has a holomorphic topological in A and a B twist, which are very similar to the ones that I was telling you about in 3D. And a slight extension of some results of Elliott and Yu shows that if you do these things on the punctured disk, you get the following spaces. So you get the two-shifted cotangent bundle of Bunji, of the Dirac stack of Bunji. You can get the I'm going to actually just skip the holomorphic twists because they're not going to be that relevant later, and I'm running out of time. And then in the B twist, you get the two-shifted cotangent bundle of flat G bundles on the punctured disk. And again, I'm going to apply geometric quantization, and here these things are two-shifted, so I should get two categories. And the two categories I'm going to get are sheaves of categories under Bunji over Bunji to ROM. If you guys have ever seen anything about local Langlands, this is also equivalent to categories that are modules over the category of D modules on the loop group. Or in the B twist, you get sheaves of categories over flat G bundles on the punctured disk, which is the same thing as modules over quasi-coherent sheaves on flat G on the punctured disk. This is why Sam like actually wrote down this category, was to make sense of this theorem. And the way that one should think of these categories is that if you think about in 4D, like the link of a surface in 4D would actually be a circle. And so you should think of these things as being surface operators, or surface defects in 4D, or surface operators in 4D. And then these other pieces, those things are supposed to be boundary conditions for this 4D theory. More generally, if you have any 3D n equals 4 theory with a G symmetry, this thing should be giving you some boundary condition for 4D n equals 4 with gauge group G. And I wrote this twice. Oh, whatever. All right. So then like one wants to know, like, how does one make sense of a boundary condition? And the way that one makes sense of a boundary condition is it should be a Lagrangian inside of either the three or the one shifted cotangent bundle of BG, or really both simultaneously, again, for the same sort of reason. And the canonical example is that if I have G acting on one of these two zero cotangent bundles, like either two shifted or zero shifted, and that action is Hamiltonian, then I will get a map to basically either G dual shifted by two or G dual shifted by zero. And then when I mod out by G, that this space can be identified with either the three or one shifted cotangent bundle of BG. And you can actually identify this thing with the conormal, the three or one shifted conormal of the map from X mod G to BG. So like that's how you embed a cotangent theory with a G symmetry into this picture. And then like these other pictures are actually like all just other Lagrangians, which I won't write down. But this is just some conormal, this is some twisted conormal, and there's just like a bunch of other like any Lagrangian one could look at it. But I just need these right now. And I'm not gonna tell you what Lagrangians they are, but they're just some Lagrangians. And then one can use the AKSZ formalism to basically produce Lagrangians inside either, I keep switching between flat G and loc G. Sorry, I'll fix that. To either get a Lagrangian inside of flat G, or one can get a, well, it's more difficult, but one can also get a Lagrangian inside of Bunji, the two-shifted cotangent bundle of Bunji to ROM. And the only important thing about this stuff in blue is that conormals go to conormals, like under applying maps. It's not really that important. And when one actually looks at what one gets when you apply geometric quantization to these Lagrangians, the way that you should think about this is that you've got this Lagrangian in a two-shifted thing. You intersect, if you want to know like what the stock of this quantization is going to be over a particular point in, say, Bunji to ROM, you intersect with the cotangent fiber, you find something one-shifted, you quantize it in order to get a category, and then basically if you put those categories together as you vary into a sheaf, that's the sheaf. And so like what you find when you do this computation is that you're just getting a sheafy version of the 3D line operators that I wrote down for you earlier. Like basically you're just finding them like smeared over either flat G DROM, or say flat G on the punctured disk or bun G on the punctured disk DROM. And like what this is that there's some relationship between surfaces in the bulk and lines on the boundary, which is kind of summarized by this picture. You have a surface and you hit the boundary, it turns into a line. Okay, and then like if you have interfaces, like roughly like things go like in a very similar way, except for now instead of Lagrangians, you get Lagrangian correspondences. And then instead of getting like an object in the category of inside of sheaves of categories, you get some functor between sheaves of categories for different groups. And like basically this here is either supposed to be A twist or B twist or HT twist, depending on the context. Okay, so far so good? Good. All right. So then what one wants to know is, suppose that I've got two different Lagrangian correspondences between two shifted cotangent bundles, and then I take their fiber product, which would be the composition of these Lagrangian correspondences. If I do geometric quantization, I'm going to get a functor for my first Lagrangian and a functor for my second Lagrangian, and also a functor for this fiber product. And you want to know, does that commute? And basically, I don't know the answer in general, but for conormals and twisted conormals, like Pavel Safronov told me it's true, and I'm going to believe him. And in fact, like as a corollary of this, you can actually verify that Hanani-Witten move that I was writing down earlier, like just with a finite dimensional computation about symplectic varieties and not involving any categories whatsoever, and then the functoriality of geometric quantization will actually prove this Hanani-Witten move for you, which is that like if you look at the sequence of functors given by this brain picture and the sequence of functors given by this brain picture, like they're actually coming from isomorphic spaces, and so the categories will be the same. Like it's anyway, like you can just reduce this to like a very like computation that somebody did in the 80s about spaces of solutions to Nam's equations. All right, so now like the other piece of this puzzle that I was using was S-duality. And where I said that like S-duality swaps the D5 brain and the NS5 brain. Well, let's think about like what that would mean. Well, if I look at the A-twist, I'll get some functor between like my A-type sheaves of categories. And if I look at the B-twist, I'll get some functor between my B-type sheaves of categories. Similarly, if I do this guy, I can get a functor for my B-type and a functor for my A-type. And you can match up these categories using local Langlands. Like this, these two are equivalent by local Langlands, and these two are equivalent by local Langlands. And basically, two things are S-dual if, you know, a priori you've got four objects, but you've also got these equivalences, and if you just only have two, then I would say that these two interfaces are S-dual. And this is just some concrete computation that one can make about two functors between some two categories. And in fact, like people who do geometric, local geometric Langlands, they know some of these already. Like they don't know them all, but they know a lot of them. More generally, if I have G acting on some 3D theory, and G and the Langlands dual group acting on some other 3D theory, then I would say that those guys are S-dual if the object in sheaves of categories that you get, the A-type object corresponding to your first theory, is isomorphic to the B-type object coming from your second theory under the local Langlands correspondence, which matches these two categories. So that would be the definition of like what it would mean for two theories to be S-dual. And in fact, like one can even work out like a kernel for what, like how to like work out like what the S-dual is just from these brain constructions. So suppose that I've got like GLN acting on some theory T, and then also GLN, which you should think of as the Langlands dual GLN, working on some, acting on some theory T dual. Then one can recover T dual by thinking of T dual as a boundary condition for 4D n equals 4, and then pairing with this particular string of D5 brains, which people call the Dirichlet boundary condition. Basically, this thing just forgets that you have a GLN action on your theory and just spits this thing back out. So this is like a null op. And then one applies S-duality to this whole configuration, and by definition, this gets swapped with that. Like that was my definition of S-duality. And then I told you that D5s go to NS5s. And if you work out like what this configuration is. This is really just the boundary condition corresponding to the 3D to a 3D quiver gauge theory. And it's the quiver gauge theory that gives you the flag variety for GLN, or the cotangent bundle of the flag variety for GLN. And that theory has actually makes sense for any group, and they call it like T of G. So this one's T of GLN. One thing that's kind of interesting is that this boundary condition D of G is actually Lagrangian. It's one of these ones that I find easy to make sense of. But T of G is actually not. So we still have a lot of trouble making sense of this outside of type A, although I think Braverman has some like good ideas about how to do it. But one can actually still get a lot of information like by using the S-duality with Dirichlet, which is actually like a very nice theory, and not very hard to deal with. Okay, so then I just finished. Let me just tell you some future work that would be interesting to do. So the first thing is that, as I mentioned, the S-dual of a Lagrangian theory is not always Lagrangian, and one would like to have a version of this theory that can like encompass the objects coming from things like T of G, like for other groups. Second, there was nothing special about putting this on the punctured disk. You could easily just put this thing on a global curve, and then you would just get a bunch of statements about global Langlands. And even more interestingly, like if you put this thing on the formal bubble, which is the disk union, the disk over the formal punctured disk, you find a relationship between local operators in 3D and line operators in 4D. And this was already sort of sketched out, although not completely, but they almost all of it is in this paper by BFN on ring objects in the geometric Satake category. The other thing I'll say is that there's nothing at all special about Langlands and symplectic duality in this picture. Like, this is just a relationship between a field theory in dimension n and its boundary field theory in dimension n minus 1. Like, one could easily look at the relationship between local operators in 2D theories, which is quantum cohomology, and line operators in 3D cohomology. And this gives you, some stuff that Kapranov has done about computing quantum cohomology using loop spaces, using cohomology of loop spaces. And I think this was maybe even one of the original ideas for quantum cohomology. One could easily do interfaces for 3D theories just like I did in 4D, with the same geometric quantization technology. And in fact, you can put all this stuff that I've been talking about together into three massive infinity three functors that just encompass all the field theories of dimension, or not all the field theories, but all the field theories I've talked about of dimensions 4 and lower. And that would be sort of the mega theorem if one could prove it. Anyway, I'll stop.
Questions? Okay.